Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, next month, the Dalai Lama is going to release his first album. That's right, the Dalai Lama is going to release an album. It promises newly composed music along with mantras and chants. The release of the album, titled Inner World, will coincide with the Tibetan spiritual leader's 85th birthday. But what do we know of this latest, if indeed late, entrant to the music scene? I mean, we're here now to give us, how shall I put this, an ABC on the Tibetan spiritual leader is UCD politics lecturer and the man who knows a thing or two about a thing or two, Mr. Graham Findlay. Graham, you're very welcome to the programme. You have had a sneak listen to the album, a pre-listen. Wow, what's it like? Any good?
Yes, he dropped a track called Compassion.
Did he now?
To sort of tease us into the July release of the album. I'm talking as if I actually, you know, speak this music world speak. But no, it's the kind of thing you like if you like that kind of thing. It's very atmospheric, but, you know, not bad atmospheric. It's a bit hippie. And it's, you know, mostly him just chanting various mantras over it. So, and it's not in a language I speak. So it sounds pretty good.
Wait a minute. Chanting mantras over it. What's it?
But the music is, it's sort of atmospheric sort of music. It's not really melodic, you know, the way, say, John Paul II's albums tended to be.
This is a strange conversation about music. I never heard John Paul II's album. Was it good?
Oh, he was prolific. You know, he had a lot of albums.
Oh, did he?
I was listening in, you know, for you, Dave, I was listening to some of John Paul II's music, which is sort of more like pop classical crossover music. And even Francis has put out a track of prog rock with him saying stuff like, wake up.
Really?
Over it. So there's a long tradition of popes releasing albums, but not so much lamas. So, I think the goal is for it to be soothing.
Right.
And it is that, right? I mean, I don't think you'd want to put it on driving late at night or anything.
Okay,
like that.
So it works as some
kind
of...
I encourage people to go into Spotify or any other place you can access the track. I think Spotify is probably the easiest. And check it out and see if it's the kind of thing you're into. Because the Dalai Lama is such a celebrity that there's a real market for this, to be honest. He's big on Twitter. He's extremely well known. He's very popular with celebrities, and that actually is part of his genius as a modern day religious figure, who's been campaigning for human rights and the self-determination of the people of Tibet ever since he was forced to flee Tibet. So, but he's really, I've written a little bit on celebrity politics, and he's a really good example of someone using celebrity and his own celebrity to actually make real gains in the political world.
Okay, well, social media big on. He's now got an album coming out called Inner World, and you can check it out on Spotify, or certainly check out one track on Spotify. And it is kind of, as you call it, atmospheric hippie music, maybe a little bit of kind of chanting here and whatever there. So the point is that, like, the Dalai Lama, who is he? And you said the word religious there. Is he a religious leader or a spiritual leader?
Well, that's a really good question as well. So Buddhism, and he is sort of the highest figure in Tibetan Buddhism, which is a very, very influential sect in Buddhism, or a school of Buddhism. There are various sects within the school. And so it's as much a philosophy as it is a sort of religion where you try to interact with holy creatures and go on to some desirable afterlife, right? Its particular form of Buddhism isn't as austere as the earliest teachings of the Buddha, and it does hold out the hope of an afterlife, but he is seen as the reincarnation of Avalokiteshvara, who is sometimes they refer to them as Buddhist saints. He's a bodhisattva, which is a Buddha who's attained enlightenment, but instead of just going on to be enlightened and not coming back to earth through the wheel of reincarnation, comes back to earth to help us all achieve enlightenment so we can all leave this horrible cycle of being reborn, doing things which attach us to this life, usually negative things like hatred or desire. The idea of the bodhisattva, which is a very, very important figure and is maybe basic to the Buddha's story itself, is, again, that they come back, even though they don't have to allow us all to attain enlightenment. And that's what the Dalai Lama is certainly ostensibly doing in his role as a religious leader. So he leads this sect. He's also, I mean, until he had to flee Tibet, he was also the political leader of Tibet. And the Dalai Lamas had been the senior lamas, the senior political figure of Tibet for hundreds of years by that point. So he also represents the struggle for self-determination of Tibetan people. And a lot of the repression and human rights violations we see in Tibet, which was occupied by China in 1950, you know, stem from their desire to repress and certainly control the Tibetan Buddhist hierarchy, and not least the Dalai Lama.
So is there any relation to, say, Hong Kong or something? Like, Hong Kong has its own whatever, but yet really it's ruled by China. So what about Tibet? Has it got its own whatever? Is it autonomous and the freedom to govern itself, or is it ruled completely by China?
So the history of Tibet has been, and this is something which China sometimes emphasizes, is that, you know, for a long time it was an independent kingdom. Then from about 1720 to 1913, it was an autonomous part of China, where its philosophy, the Buddhist philosophy, had a huge influence on the rulers, mostly Mongol or Manchu rulers. But it's a very now under China. So then it became independent when China collapsed after during the First World War. And then it was China reasserted its control and basically annexed it in 1950. But it's a really large region in the west of China, which is an autonomous region, but its autonomy is not what it once was. If you've been following the violations of the rights of the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province, autonomous region, Tibet is to the south of Xinjiang in the west of China. It's a huge region. And while it enjoys nominal autonomy, China has been asserting greater and greater control over Tibet ever since 1950, where it showed up with an army. And then the then 15-year-old Dalai Lama, who had been in power for a few years by then, decided the Tibetan army was no match for the Chinese army, so allowed China to sort of annex the area. He then tried to work with the communists, but eventually there was an uprising of Tibetan people in Lhasa, the sort of capital of Tibet, and with barricades and all sorts of actual street fighting against the Chinese army. And that all arose because they thought that the Chinese government was going to take the Dalai Lama back into China to try and control him more. So he ended up fleeing at age 23. He's still a very young man, to northern India, where he set up a government in exile with about 80,000 Tibetan exiles in Dharamshala in India. And he's been there ever since. So China, in the meantime, has decried him as a splittist and a feudalist, because before China took over, this is their argument, it was a theocracy and a feudal society. So China has not got along with the Dalai Lama ever since, and takes a lot of steps at international level to prevent people from recognizing him.
And would he, in exile, be the kind of guy who would say, well, it's still like whatever we want for ourselves is a theocracy? In other words, like that the religion or the priests rule in the name of God and all the rest. Is that all still part of it big time in terms of him now being in exile for the last 60 years or so?
No, and that's why he is a really, really interesting figure. China hates him. And like I said, is trying to keep anybody from acknowledging him. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1989, largely as a rebuke to China's actions in Tiananmen Square. But he has actually said that Tibetans need to be ruled more democratically. And in fact, he gave up his sort of temporal power to an elected government a while ago now. He's even said that maybe he won't be reborn. You know, one of the interesting things about the Dalai Lama is he has complete control over the conditions of his rebirth. That's one of the privileges of being a bodhisattva. And he said, look, maybe I'm going to have a consultation when I turn 90, which is in 5 years, and see if we're going to have Dalai Lamas anymore, right? And if so, maybe I'll be reborn as a woman. But in any case, he doesn't want the office of the Dalai Lama to have that kind of political power, state power in some kind of autonomous Tibet. He's also been more open, much to the disappointment of some Tibetans, to some form of autonomy within China, sort of real autonomy as opposed to the not so real autonomy which they have now.
And what kind of thing are we talking about in terms of the whole area? Like, I mean, the Himalayan Central Asian place, are we talking countries or states, or are we talking parishes, or is it kingdoms?
Yeah, well, it was a kingdom for a very long time, and again, sort of a largely autonomous one. So, in the 17th century, the Dalai Lamas were able to set themselves up as sort of theocratic. They've served the office of a king, and there was a sort of family nature at the beginning. It's a very large region, which is much larger than the actual current autonomous region, which is still pretty large. Again, it's just north of Nepal and India. It's Mount Everest, which everybody knows, is on the border of Tibet and Nepal. And in fact, the Chinese government turns access to the north side of Mount Everest on and off to tourists, depending on how the political winds blow. But they've actually been encouraging tourism in Tibet to no small degree, with considerable success, because it's a famously beautiful place. People may have seen pictures of this immense palace which the Dalai Lamas had, which is the Potala in Lhasa. But for a long time it was a kingdom, but now it's just an autonomous region of China. The scale of the place needs to be mentioned. It's much bigger than the other kind of provinces of China, which is, I think, probably part of the concern. People may have also heard about sort of clashes on the border between India and China, which is never a good thing. And that's because this area is so big, has so many resources, including water, that there's a lot of competition for territory up there as well.
Okay, what about just the actual name? I mean, like, if you take members of parliament in Britain and you take ministers, and then the prime minister, the main one, is the head honcho, and that's Boris Johnson. In this case here, are there lots of lamas, and this guy's the head lama, and that's what Dalai Lama means?
There is lots of lamas. The lamas are sort of named after their historic origins, but... in fact, Tibetan Buddhism is described as Lamaism, perhaps in ways which the Tibetan Buddhists don't really like. But that's the distinctive doctrine of Tibetan Buddhism, which is very, very influential in the West. I was about to say, I'm living in Inchicore, where we have a lovely Tibetan Buddhist center, and the Dalai Lama may have actually visited my street, because the Buddhist center used to be on my street.
Right.
But, the tradition of the lamas is this idea that these Buddhist saints, if that's a way to relate to them, control their rebirth and continue to reappear to play this role in society. And so there is a hierarchy. The Dalai Lama is the top one.
If he's going to be reborn, it doesn't necessarily mean that he has any control over his rebirth. So could we have a female Dalai Lama?
Well, no, he does. He's asserted his control over his rebirth. That's one of the things about having attained enlightenment, that you know your past lives and you can influence your future lives. So he has said that he may choose to be reborn as a woman. It's a really interesting process. When he was appointed the Dalai Lama, or he was found to be the Dalai Lama, what happened was they sent out a whole search party for suitable boy children, in this case, who displayed the characteristics of a lama or of the Dalai Lama in the greater Tibet region. And they looked around and they looked around, and the previous Dalai Lama said, I'm going to be born roughly here. And so they looked around and they tried a few candidates that they didn't really work out. But when he was one or two, they came to his village, and the Sera Lama was sort of pretending to be a servant of the other search party members. Yeah. And he went, and they went to his house, and the then young, one or two, Dalai Lama went up to him and asked for a sort of rattle, which he was holding, the Lama was holding. And he said, well, if you can tell me who I am, you can have it. He said, Sera Lama, Sera Lama.
Really?
in a language which was not his own.
Right.
They then tested him further. And this is what they do with all the lamas. They had some of the old Dalai Lama's possessions and offered that and something else to him. And each time he chose the Dalai Lama's, possessions.
Yeah.
And this process is absolutely fascinating, but it's really political. I mean, they found one of the lamas they found was reborn in Seattle, which was interesting.
Has he actually spoken much about his reincarnation? I mean, like, he's 85 years old, sprightly, yeah, I'm sure, but not exactly a spring chicken. So, what's going to happen?
He's spoken a lot about his reincarnation, because that's kind of the main thing, right? And so again, he said it may not happen at all. He's going to have a sort of consultation process on that, but he's strongly asserted that he's in charge of this. Not China, right? Not India.
Okay, he's in charge of this, but surely China might see this as an opportunity to jump in. Right, when he goes, we're going to stamp our foot down this time.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, but it's a tricky choice for China. They don't want unrest in Tibet. And he's stressed that, you know, political, you know, states should not get involved. And he's been accused of being a pawn of India. He's been accused of being a pawn of the CIA. And indeed, the CIA helped him escape Tibet. So fair enough. Mm. But China, I mean, China has some form in this area where the second most important Lama, the Panchen Lama, died unexpectedly. And they found a child who they said, look, this is the reincarnated Panchen Lama. And China said, no, we don't like that one. And they basically kidnapped the child for his own protection, in quotation marks, and whisked him off. And he has never been seen again. And they presented
and
another list.
And when did that happen?
This was back in 1990s.
Wow.
So 1995. And so China presented the Tibetan Buddhists with the lamas with another list of children, which they could choose one from. And they were basically forced to choose the current Panchen Lama. And there's a tremendous resistance to China's choice for Panchen Lama still to this day. And it's viewed as
And what about that Panchen Lama? If he's the number two, and if he was placed there by kidnapping the proper one, if he was placed there by China, what's he been like? I mean, does the Dalai Lama get on with him?
No, is the answer. Yeah. I mean, the Dalai Lama hasn't been able to go back to Tibet since.
And is the second guy in Tibet, is he?
He's in Tibet.
Ah,
he's in
lads, come on. That's that's called a coup, I think.
Well, exactly. Well, I mean, and it's a very strange thing for a secular state like the Chinese government to interfere with religious matters which involve the reincarnation of people according to their wishes, right? And all of this, you know, highly theological work. But, you know, so the Panchen Lama is much more pliant to, as you imagine, to the Chinese government than the current Dalai Lama. Now, if China does the same thing with the Dalai Lama, it's going to be much more fraught because
it's going to prevent
kind of compromise between the people, and it could lead to another rebellion in Tibet.
Yeah, but it does look as though they might take their chance this time because they're fed up with all the nonsense. It really does. You know, whenever your man pops his slugs, that's it.
Absolutely. I mean, and right now we're seeing a China which is much more assertive on the international stage, which is trying all sorts of stuff on. I mean, the new sort of basically removing the one country, two systems in Hong Kong is China taking advantage of this crisis and maybe a lack of American leadership to throw its weight around. The border clashes with India, they're all part of a pattern of becoming very assertive. So you could see them saying, right, we're in charge. This is the Dalai Lama. If you don't like it, you know, too bad.
And do all lamas get reincarnated?
Well, again, the idea is that they all get reincarnated. It's quite dramatic that the Dalai Lama thinks that maybe it should literally die out as a tradition. But yeah, the idea is that there's an unbroken line of succession. So they look for children, usually boy children, born in the year after the death of the Lama. So they have some time to work through it. But the idea is, yeah, because Buddhism focuses on Hinduism focuses on the sheer awfulness of being reincarnated into different forms over a long period forever. You know, the idea is quite natural that the lamas should be reincarnated, but they're coming back to help us all avoid this horrible wheel of life and reincarnation.
And do you feel very special, Graham? I mean, like, let's face it, the Dalai Lama never visited my street.
Yeah. Well, again, this is a rumor and maybe what my friend who's living in the house likes to say. But a house on our street was the Buddhist center until they acquired their absolutely lovely building in Kilmainham, which is sort of Inchicore. But, you know, the Dalai Lama has visited Ireland a few times. In 1973, he visited as a relatively young man. But in 1991, the visit was very, very interesting because China puts real pressure on governments not to meet with him.
Yeah.
And Mary Robinson met with him despite Charlie Haigh saying she shouldn't. He really pressured her not to.
Really?
But she met with him anyway. And she was the only sort of head of state he met during that entire tour of Europe. And he visited just about every country in Europe.
Because they're too scared. Kowtow to China, yeah.
Yeah, so that's it. I mean, China, this is something which China cares about a lot because they are very concerned about potential uprisings in Tibet. Their accusation, I mean, there's a lot of human rights violations.
All right, well, look,
Tibet.
I'll tell you, I'm going to listen to this album when it comes out, because that's what we're talking about here, really. Inner World, it coincides with the Tibetan spiritual leader's 85th birthday. It's an album of atmospheric hippie music, I think is probably what you said. Mantras, again, chants and music.
like the Dalai Lama itself, it will have a calming effect.
Fantastic. Graham, that's fantastic. Thank you very much. As in, I was going to say spiritual leader. No, that's the other guy. You're a UCD politics lecturer and the man who knows a thing, as they say, about everything. So thank you very much indeed, Graham Finlay, for being with us on the programme once again. Thanks, Graham.